Welcome to the Biology Audio Tutorial Series by Rapid Learning Center. In this audio tutorial, we will cover the Introduction to Evolutionary Thought. By completing this audio tutorial, you will learn about the definition of evolutionary biology, pre-Darwinian history of evolutionary thought, Darwinian evolution, or the theory of natural selection, the modern evolutionary synthesis, and a review of the basic principles of genetics. We will begin with a quote from the famous evolutionary geneticist, Theodosius Dobzhansky. He wrote, "Nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution." This quote succinctly defines the importance of evolutionary biology to all other studies of biology. Evolutionary biology is a central unifying theory to all biological disciplines. Conceptually, evolutionary biology is central to all other biological disciplines, including but not limited to botany, zoology, physiology, ecology, genetics, anthropology, epidemiology, neurobiology, anatomy, and developmental biology. While other disciplines in biology focus on answering how things happen in the natural world, evolutionary biology answers the ultimate question of why a particular trait or phenotype is as it is. The next thing we will discuss in this audio tutorial is the definition of evolutionary biology and who studies evolutionary biology. Evolutionary biology is an interdisciplinary area of biology that studies the history of life on Earth. Evolutionary biologists are concerned with the origin, descent, distribution, and changes in species over time. This level of investigation is known as macroevolution. They are also concerned with the origin, descent, distribution, and changes in allele or gene frequencies over time. Studies at this level of organization are known as microevolution. Evolution can be defined as descent through genetic inheritance with modification. Evolutionary biology can be studied in the laboratory or in the field. It is studied by many types of biologists because it is such an interdisciplinary area of biology. Evolutionary biology can be studied by botanists, zoologists, geneticists, ecologists, physiologists, neurologists, marine biologists, theoreticians, geologists, epidemiologists, anthropologists, or developmental biologists. Note that although this list is extensive, it is not exhaustive. We will now turn to the pre-Darwinian history of evolutionary thought and focus on early theories of evolution, and specifically Lamarckism. One early theory of evolution was the Great Chain of Being, or Scala Naturae. This was the most widely accepted early evolutionary theory in Western society prior to Darwin. This idea was a form of classification for all living and non-living beings that was strictly hierarchical, and organisms could not move from their place in this hierarchy. Earth and minerals formed the basis of this scale, followed by plants, animals, man, angels, and finally God, or perfection. This idea influenced Carolus Linnaeus's taxonomic system, which we still use today in its modified form. This idea of classification was widely accepted until Darwin's time. Another early theory of evolution was Lamarckism, named after its founder, Jean-Baptiste Lamarck, who was one of the most notable evolutionists prior to Charles Darwin. This theory is most commonly referred to as the inheritance of acquired characteristics. According to this theory, individuals acquire characters they require and lose characters they do not use. This is sometimes referred to as use and disuse. These characters are inherited by offspring, although at the time the mechanism of inheritance was unknown. This process results in the development of higher forms, suggesting that evolution is a directed process, which we now know is not correct. This theory was discredited by the modern evolutionary synthesis when mechanisms of inheritance were better understood. In order to better understand the principles of Lamarckism, we will go over two examples. One example of a Lamarckism would be a giraffe that must stretch its neck to reach the leaves on the highest trees that would in turn have offspring with longer necks due to the stretching and strengthening of the parental neck. Another example would be a bodybuilder who works to strengthen his muscles, and in turn has children with bigger muscles. Remember that these are hypothetical examples, and that neither of these examples is correct, because Lamarckism has been discredited. Lamarckism is not a viable theory of evolution. You will now learn about Darwinian evolution, which is the explanation of evolution that we still accept today. We will first discuss Charles Darwin, followed by his theory of natural selection, and finally discuss an example of natural selection, antibiotic resistance. Charles Darwin is known as the father of modern evolutionary biology, as he is responsible for developing the theory of natural selection that explains the process of evolution. He originally studied to be a clergyman at Cambridge University. This is where he excelled at natural history. A professor at the university invited him on an expedition to chart the South American coastline aboard the HMS Beagle ship. On this expedition, Darwin made many observations that formed the basis of his theory of natural selection. These observations included those of the Galapagos finches and tortoises, which are still studied and used as examples in evolution today. During this expedition, Darwin also read Charles Lyell's Principles of Geology, which explained the Earth's gradual change over time, which made Darwin realize that the time it would take for evolution to occur was possible based on the age of the Earth. Darwin also studied Thomas Malthus's theory, which suggested that population growth is limited by available resources, which in turn results in a struggle for existence. Darwin recognized that individuals with the best traits will survive the struggle, reproduce, and pass on these beneficial traits. Darwin also studied animal breeding methods, most notably the breeding methods of pigeon breeders. Breeders choose the most desirable traits and reproduce those individuals. This is also known as artificial selection, and is still practiced today in domestic plants and animals worldwide. Together, these experiences culminated in the publication of On the Origin of Species in 1859, where Darwin meticulously outlined the theory of natural selection. This book formed the basis of evolutionary biology that we know today. There are three main principles of Darwin's theory of natural selection. The theory requires that there is 1. Variation in traits within a population, 2. Differential reproductive success, and 3. Traits that are heritable from parent to offspring. In order to better understand the principles of this theory and illustrate how natural selection works, let us imagine a population of butterflies. The theory requires variation in traits. Imagine that the population of butterflies consists of blue and orange butterflies. There is variation for color in the population. There must also be differential reproductive success among individuals having these traits. In this butterfly example, blue butterflies are more likely to be eaten by birds than orange butterflies, and thus less likely to live and reproduce. Thus, orange butterflies in this case have a higher reproductive success. Coloration in this example must be heritable. The surviving orange butterflies have orange offspring because more orange butterflies survive and reproduce. The result of this natural selection process is that the more advantageous trait, orange coloration, will become more common in the population each generation. We will now look at an example of natural selection in the modern world by discussing the evolution of antibiotic resistance. Antibiotics are used to treat bacterial infections. Some bacteria carry genes making them resistant to antibiotics. Thus, there is variation in resistance to antibiotics that is heritable. After treating the population of bacteria with antibiotic A, the resistant bacteria survive, reproduce, and populate the next generation of bacteria, resulting in a resistant strain of bacteria. This demonstrates differential reproductive success of the resistant bacteria. If the resistant bacteria were again treated with antibiotic A, it would not work, and the bacteria would remain. Antibiotic A is no longer effective in treating this particular strain of bacteria. This is why it is important that antibiotics are not overprescribed and that an antibiotic is prescribed to treat the particular type of bacteria causing an infection. Antibiotic resistance is a classic example of evolution at work. The next topic we will cover is the modern evolutionary synthesis. We will begin with a definition, followed by natural selection and genetics, and finally with a discussion of Mendelian genetics and beyond. The modern evolutionary synthesis occurred with the combination of Darwin's theory of natural selection with Mendel's theory of genetics and subsequent genetic studies. Prior to the modern evolutionary synthesis, the mode of inheritance of traits was unknown. To review, recall that Darwin's theory of natural selection requires variation in traits, differential reproductive success, and heritable traits. Although these principles explained natural selection, Darwin did not know how the variation he observed arose, or how these traits were passed from parent to offspring. The modern evolutionary synthesis gave us the answers to these questions. We now know that variation in traits arises by chance through genetic mutations, and that traits are inherited by offspring from parents on genes located on chromosomes. This modern evolutionary synthesis occurred in the first half of the 20th century, when Mendel's work with peas was rediscovered and was able to explain the heritability of traits. In the early 20th century, T.H. Morgan's work with Drosophila mutants confirmed Mendel's observations of inheritance. Furthermore, R.A. Fisher derived a statistical model to explain Mendelian inheritance, which was also the beginning of theoretical population genetics. In addition, T. Dobzhansky's work with natural populations of Drosophila resulted in a book entitled Genetics and the Origin of Species, where he integrated Mendelian genetics, population genetics, and natural selection. Together, these studies, among others, formed the modern evolutionary synthesis. We will end this audio tutorial with a review of the basic principles of genetics, including basic genetic structures, Punnett squares, and Mendelian inheritance. First, we will review basic genetic structures, including chromosomes, loci, genes, and alleles. Let us start with chromosomes, which contain all of the genetic information of an organism. Diploid organisms have two copies of each chromosome. Now we will go over the material that makes up chromosomes. A locus, or loci when plural, is the location of a gene on a chromosome. Genes are portions of chromosomes that code for a particular trait, located at specific loci. An allele is a version of a particular gene. For each gene, there can be several possible alleles. However, each diploid individual can only carry two particular alleles. These two alleles could be the same or different. For example, imagine a gene for height with alternate forms of tall and short. The tall and short forms are the two possible alleles for this gene. An individual could carry two tall alleles, two short alleles, or one of each allele. Next, we will cover Punnett squares. Punnett squares help determine offspring genotypes from a cross between two individuals. A genotype of an individual is the actual allelic makeup of a particular trait, while the phenotype is the observable expression of the genotype. A homozygous individual has two copies of the same allele at a locus, while a heterozygous individual has two different alleles at a locus. Dominant, in heterozygotes, is the allele that is expressed in the phenotype, while recessive, in heterozygotes, is the allele that is not expressed in the phenotype. As an example, consider the trait size, having two possible alleles, big A and small a. Capital letters are dominant alleles, while lowercase letters are recessive alleles in a Punnett square. There are three possible genotypes, big A, big A, small a, and small a, small a. From these genotypes, there are two possible phenotypes, big and small. Because in this case, the big A allele is completely dominant. In a cross between two homozygous individuals, all offspring will be genotypically heterozygous and phenotypically big. A simple Punnett square has four quadrants, A Punnett square may help you determine the possible offspring genotypes and phenotypes given parents with known genotypes by placing the genotype of one parent above the square and the genotype of the other parent on the left-hand side of the square. Each allele for each parent sits above or to the left-hand side of a square. For each quadrant within the square, place the corresponding allele from each parent into that quadrant, that is, the allele that sits above or to the left-hand side of that quadrant. Let us move on to Mendelian inheritance. In the mid-1800s, Gregor Mendel discovered the laws of dominance, segregation, and independent assortment from his work with peas. We will first go over an example of dominance using a chromosome model. Consider two individuals, homozygous for contrasting phenotypes, yellow and green. That is, one individual carries two yellow alleles and the other two green alleles for color. When these two phenotypes are crossed, only one of the phenotypes will be observable in their offspring, if there is complete dominance. That is, all of their heterozygous offspring will express the dominant phenotype. If we assume that yellow is the dominant phenotype, all of their offspring will be yellow. Now let us consider Mendel's law of segregation. Segregation occurs during meiosis and the formation of gametes. A diploid organism carries two alleles of a gene, but only one of those alleles will be passed on to their offspring because chromosomes separate during gamete formation. This can be demonstrated again using a chromosome model. After meiosis, each set of chromosomes has been duplicated. During gametogenesis, the chromosomes separate into individual gametes. Consequently, the two alleles at a particular locus also separate. The allele that is inherited by the individual's offspring is a matter of chance. That is, the segregation of alleles is random. Lastly, we will discuss Mendel's law of independent assortment. The law of independent assortment states that genes at different loci are not inherited together. That is, they sort independent from each other during gamete formation. For example, the inheritance of blood type does not influence the inheritance of toe number. This too can be demonstrated using a chromosome model. After meiosis, each set of chromosomes has been duplicated, and during gametogenesis, the chromosomes separate into individual gametes. Alleles located on different chromosomes are separated into gametes independently. The result is that new gene combinations that were not present in either parent may appear in their offspring. Note, however, that genes closely linked or physically close together on a chromosome do not necessarily sort independently. Now that we have covered the material of this audio tutorial, we will move on to some stop and think activities. For the first activity, consider a cross between a heterozygous parent with genotype big T and little t, and a homozygous dominant parent with genotype big T, big T. Complete a Punnett square to determine the possible offspring genotypes and phenotypes and answer the following questions. 1 through 4 asks for the results from the cross in the Punnett square, that is, the quadrants. And 5 and 6 ask for how many offspring are heterozygous and how many offspring are tall. When you cross a heterozygous parent with a homozygous dominant parent, you get the following possible offspring genotypes and phenotypes. 1. A homozygous dominant, big T, big T. 2. A heterozygote, big T, little t. 3. Another homozygous dominant, big T, big T. And 4. Another heterozygote, big T, little t. Therefore, the number of offspring that are heterozygous is 2, or 50%, and the number of offspring that are tall is 4, or 100%. The next activity requires you to fill in the blanks with the correct term. Choosing from the following terms, gene, locus, alleles, chromosome pair, and chromosome. These items are labeled on a diagram of a chromosome pair. For the audio tutorial, we will simply go over the definitions of these terms. 1. is a chromosome. A chromosome contains all of the genetic information of an organism. 2. Is a chromosome pair. Recall that diploid organisms have two copies of each chromosome, or a pair of chromosomes. 3. Is a locus, or the location of a gene on the chromosome. 4. Is a gene, which is a portion of the chromosome that code for a particular trait. 5. Is alleles, which are alternate versions of a particular gene. For the last activity, you must match the left key term with its definition on the right. Again, for the audio tutorial, we will simply go over these definitions. The key terms include homozygous, genotype, phenotype, heterozygous, and recessive. The matched key terms are as follows. Homozygous is having two copies of the same allele at a locus. Genotype is the allelic makeup of a trait. Phenotype is the observable expression of the genotype. Heterozygous is having two different alleles at a locus. Recessive, in heterozygotes, is the allele that is not expressed in the phenotype. We will now summarize what we have covered in this audio tutorial. You have learned that evolutionary biology is interdisciplinary and studies the origin and changes in species and allele frequencies over time. You also know that Lamarck's theory of use and disuse, or inheritance of acquired characteristics, is not a valid evolutionary theory, while Darwin's theory of natural selection is still a valid evolutionary theory today. Recall that Darwin's theory has three principles and requires that a trait has variation, heritability, and differential reproductive success for evolution to occur. In addition, you learned that the modern evolutionary synthesis integrated the theory of natural selection and modern genetics. And lastly, that an understanding of genetic inheritance and structure is imperative to understanding evolution. For more information about the subjects presented in this audio tutorial, you can read On the Origin of Species by Charles Darwin, available online at www.literature.org/authors/Darwin-Charles/the-origin-of-species/. Or you can visit the following websites from the American Museum of Natural History and PBS at www.amnh.org/exhibitions/Darwin and www.pbs.org/wgbh/evolution/darwin/index.html. Congratulations! You have successfully completed the audio tutorial Introduction to Evolutionary Thought. For more audio and visual tutorials in chemistry, biology, physics, and math, go to www.rapidlearningcenter.com. Thank you.